I'm the Canadian of the Astro Command, and when I want to know who's visiting the third planet of the star Sol, I listen to UFOs Tonight every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, according to the Earthlings, on CRN, the Cable Radio Network.
This is the UFO News and Media Update for January 21st, 1995. Ufology's only activist organization, Operation Right to Know, is cranking up the volume on its call to end UFO secrecy. A petition sent to countries the world over would be presented to the United Nations in early July of this year. Besides the petition drive, Operation Right to Know is asking for citizens of participating nations to make specific gestures in support of the UFO cause. During the first week of July, blue ribbons displayed in neighborhoods everywhere will signify a call for the release of UFO secrets. Brenda Lancaster conceived the current efforts, which she calls a week of public awareness and action aimed at the governments of the world. In 2 days, Walt Disney World begins a four-week media event to introduce its new Tomorrowland, featuring the extraterrestrial alien encounter attraction. Disney honcho Michael Eisner feels it's not scary enough, we hear. There'll be other attractions, however. Starring the first 2 weeks is a roundup of top UFO researchers. The entire event will be moderated by your host for this show, Don Ecker. And speakers set to inform visiting journalists include Zechariah Sitchin, George Knapp, Russ Estes, Yvonne Smith, and abduction experiencers Terry Stone, Don Wells, and Vern Maltese. So, Disney meets UFOs, definitely a Tomorrowland kind of thing. UFO News and Media Update is brought to you by the best UFO publication on the planet, UFO Magazine. I'm Vicki Cooper. Now back to Don Ecker, Dwight Schultz, and their guest Philip Klass on UFOs Tonight.
And we're back once again. And Phil, before we start taking some calls, and I'm going to tell everybody to, if you've been holding off, waiting to call in, now's your chance. Start ringing those
phones. Do I get a chance to comment about General Exxon?
Absolutely, of course.
All right.
But before we get into that, let me ask you, just as an aside, let's speculate for 1 minute. What if a genuine extraterrestrial craft were to crash? I mean, no doubt about it. It was a true ET craft, and it crashed. And the military moved in, and we're speculating now, and they picked it up. Do you believe they could keep it secret?
I once asked a friend of mine, an Air Force colonel, now retired, who was an aide to General Hap Arnold, and who spent many years in the Pentagon, and I asked him, I said, imagine that a courier came into the chief of staff of the Air Force, closed the door, and said, for your ears only, we have just recovered an extraterrestrial craft, super cosmic top secret. And I said to my colonel friend, I said, how long do you think it would take before every secretary in the Pentagon knew this fact? He said about 30 minutes. I said, gee, I figured it'd take 2 hours.
So in other words, what you're saying is you don't believe they could keep it secret?
Not this kind of a secret, but if that were to happen, I would expect to see some after effects. Let me give you an example. Supposing that the Air Force recovered an extraterrestrial craft at Roswell in the summer of 47. Then the word would go out. We don't know whether this is a precursor to an attack by the extraterrestrials. We've got to go all out to try to develop defenses against these flying saucers. Now, at the time of the Roswell incident, July of 47, the Air Force was funding two programs, one at General Electric, one at Ryan Aeronautical, to develop supersonic air-to-air missiles. Now, you know, UFOs are supposed to be very fast. So this is what you would need to try to defend against it. A year after Roswell, they had the Air Force canceled both of those supersonic air-to-air missile programs, which is the last thing that you would do if you had any evidence that you had extraterrestrial visitors who might possibly be hostile.
Well, it's obvious that they couldn't keep it all secret. I mean, we do know that, that something happened there. At least looking at it from my angle, from Dwight's angle, I think we would agree that it was something that has a very high degree of strangeness. But, Phil, the idea that the government cannot keep a secret is ludicrous. You and I both know they can. They do it every day, and they
do it sometimes
for many years.
Yeah.
Just this past year, under President Clinton, Hazel O'Leary, who is the director of the Department of Energy, released information about civilians, in many cases, civilians, as we found out, that claimed to be terminal, mm-hmm. were injected with radioactive material. Mothers with nursing children were given radioactive material. Retarded children was fed plutonium in their milk. We know this happened. Just the other day in the New York Times, we now find out that healthy people were secretly poisoned by radioactive material. Now, if the DOE had not released this information, it would still be top secret. How do you explain it? It's been 50 years. We know they can. And if it, in fact, were an extraterrestrial craft, according to scientist Wilbert Smith, who was a Canadian in 1950, he claimed that the United States government rated this two levels above top secret.
Yep, that was his claim.
Two levels above hydrogen
bomb. And I claim to be the smartest, handsomest ufologist in the world. Now, let's talk about the debris. If this was extraordinary debris, and if it was flown to Wright Field, as General Exxon claims, there was the place that it should have been sent was to the Battelle Memorial Institute. This was in an hour's drive away in Columbus, Ohio, and as...
Which, incidentally, is a civilian think tank.
Well, it's not just a think tank. It was, they were the ones that in 52 were hired to do the... Project Blue Book analysis of UFO reports, and in the May-June 1993 issue of International UFO Reporter, published by the Hynek Center for UFO Studies, Jenny Zeidman, who had worked there at the time, had a most interesting article. And let me quote just a bit of it. She said, during the 1940s and 50s, Battelle was surely one of the premier metallurgy research facilities in the world. Battelle was well established as a trusted and respected facility for top secret work, including the Manhattan Project. Its staff included top metallurgists, welding technology experts, physical chemists, and so on and so on. The supposition that Battelle analyzed Roswell or other UFO artifacts is a simple and obvious theory. Then Zeidman said, much to our surprise and initial puzzlement, none of the interviews and none of our other research have yet provided any evidence that Battelle has ever been in possession of UFO artifacts for Roswell or any other UFO case. And as for the elderly gentlemen whom we interviewed, their choice of words, their directness, their body language, all indicate that to their knowledge, no UFO artifacts were ever analyzed.
That doesn't surprise me in the least. We're still talking about a civilian organization, if in fact...
But they were cleared to do top secret.
But this was rated, according to at least some people, including Robert Sarbacher, as being above top secret. Now, my question is, if this, in fact, was suspected of being extraterrestrial, it makes perfect and very logical sense that the military would have kept it strictly hands on this material, and if they needed a civilian metallurgist, that they would have brought them in from the outside.
Well, they would have brought them in from Battelle, nearby, because Battelle did their top
and
secret.
And if they
work.
Did, these people still would not have been allowed to talk back at Battelle. So once again, secrecy rears its head. It makes perfect sense.
Well,
to me.
Do you think that the GAO is cleared for ultimate secret? What do you think is going to happen with the GAO investigation? Do you think they're going to cover up?
Well, they're not looking for flying saucers, Phil. You and I both know that. The GAO is not looking for flying saucers. The GAO is looking for a paper trail to make sure that this, this whatever it was, project, incident, that the military authority acted in a proper and correct manner. They're not looking for little green men, and neither is Stephen Schiff.
Oh, he isn't. I see. Okay. Well, as a matter of fact, I attended a most interesting CIA conference at Harvard in early December, at which the CIA released, made public, 80 formerly top secret documents known as National Intelligence Estimates, starting in 1950, as I recall, only 3 years after Roswell. Now, this assessment was prepared by the CIA in collaboration with the Defense Department, with the State Department, with every intelligence agency, with the State Department, and so on, to present the president every year with a strategic assessment, an estimate of where there were potential threats to the well-being of this country. And naturally, I went through the 1951. They handed out about half a dozen of them to those of us who attended. All the rest are to become available, all 80 of them, in the National Archives. I urge you to come to Washington and go through them. I went through the 1950, 52, 57 to see, did they talk about a possible extraterrestrial threat? Did they warn the president? Not a mention. Not a mention. So they were keeping it secret even from the president. And as I have revealed in my Skeptics UFO newsletter, I have quoted from once secret, top secret documents by top intelligence people that indicate that as of 1948, more than a year after Roswell, the current view, top secret view, was that if UFOs were actual craft, that they were probably Soviet spy vehicles. And in fact, one of these top secret documents, dated December 10, 1948, top secret, an assessment by the Air Force and Navy, was released in the spring of 1985. That assessment was published, featured, in the MUFON UFO Journal. And it shows that, you know, everybody, dozens, hundreds of people that had no need to know in Roswell, seemingly knew that we had extraterrestrial visitors, but all of the top defense government officials who should have been the first to know, nobody remembered to tell them.
Well, then we've got to talk, if we're going to talk about that, about the 1948 Air Material Command estimate of the situation.
Not Air Material Command. Well,
the January 1953 Robertson panel. But before we do that, Phil, we got to take a break. And when we come back, we'll finish that up and we're going to start taking some calls.
Fine.
So please hold on. We are back. And Phil, 1953, the Robertson Scientific Panel, is something that has always fascinated me. If, in fact, 1953, which was approximately 6 months after the famous July 1952 overflights of the nation's capital, the Central Intelligence Agency felt threatened to the point where they had to have some type of response to demystify this subject. Now, if there was nothing there to demystify, how do you explain they put this panel together?
Well, if you will take time to read my book, UFOs the Public Deceived, or to go through the CIA documents that they released in the late 70s, the answer to that question will be very obvious to you.
Well, please explain it to me. I'd like
it
to be obvious.
Fine. After the operators at the National Airport reported some mysterious blips on their then new but very old military radar. It was new to them. The headlines on the nation's newspapers were UFOs reported over Washington. And, as the CIA papers reveal, the White House called. They called the Wright Field and talked to Colonel Ruppelt, Captain Ruppelt. As Ruppelt later reported, it was Truman's military aide who made the call, but he later heard that the president was listening in on the conversation. And the Air Force said, we think it's due to a temperature inversion because we've had problems with spurious targets before and hot, humid weather, but we've got to investigate it. So Truman was a bit embarrassed, and the White House then called the CIA and said, the Air Force says that they think it's only due to a temperature inversion, but we'd like you to do an independent investigation. And so in July and August of 52, the CIA created a special panel of their scientific specialists to investigate, look into UFOs. They went out to the Air Force for a briefing. And in fact, in the briefing, as a result of their short-term investigation, they prepared a briefing for the director of the CIA. And as I quote in my book, from some of these once secret documents, they reported that one of the theories was that these might be men from Mars, extraterrestrial spaceships. And I'm paraphrasing from memory, but the CIA document says, however, regrettably, we've never captured any craft or any debris or recovered any physical evidence. So, meanwhile, there were two groups arose within the CIA. There was one group that said, hey, this would be an interesting project for us to launch, set up our own formal group in parallel with the Air Force. There was another group within the CIA that said, look, don't get involved. We've got more pressing problems. The Russians are developing long-range missiles. They're developing long-range bombers. That's the thing to focus on. And so if you will read my book, you'll find actual quotations from some of these internal memoranda.
Well, Phil, I have read your book, and that still does not explain the people that observed something that night other than the radar operators, including some of the radar operators who went outside. Wait a minute. Now, I sat here quietly, Phil.
Have you read the FAA report of April 1953?
Now,
the result of their investigation.
Some of the observers included airline pilots flying commercial aircraft, and some of the military pilots admitted seeing something in the air that left at a tremendous speed and they could not catch up.
As a matter of fact, I have a letter in my files from one of those interceptor pilots who wrote to me and said, Mr. Class, all we saw were lights in the sky. He said, he was one of the two interceptor pilots that was sent from the air base in Delaware. When you come to Washington, I'll dig out his letter and let you read what he said. But let's assume that you were correct. Let's assume that you're correct and that this pilot who actually flew the mission was wrong. As a matter of fact, General Ramey, who had been at the 8th Air Force headquarters at the time of the Roswell incident, was now commander of the North American Air Defense Command,
as
I recall it. And so if he knew that we had extraterrestrial visitors, if he had known it for 5 years, if he knew they were now flying over the nation's capital, perhaps getting ready to attack, if he knew that, you know, they'd been picked up on the radar on July 19th and 20th, as I recall it, surely he would then bring in dozens, hundreds of interceptor planes to be based at Andrews Air Force Base and other nearby bases, to try to protect the nation's capital.
Well, the reason that's being
A week later, when they read up what reappeared, it took them an hour to get two interceptors over Washington.
That's because the bases in the Washington, D.C. area were undergoing repairs at the time.
Bullshit.
Phil, you're on the radio.
I don't care. It's pure bullshit.
We've got that on tape.
That's a good one.
I have to. You know, I showed you respect, and I can't believe you would talk like that on my show.
Okay. Good night.
Well, there we have it,
ladies and gentlemen. There you do have it. There it is. That is civility. That is courtesy. And I would just like to say one thing, and that great mind and that great countenance that just left the airwaves. Remember the first thing he said here tonight, that tall tales can be spotted when the story changes significantly. Just remember that when you're thinking about this subject, but I really feel sorry for all of the people who've been holding on.
Well, let's take some calls anyway.
I still can't figure out why he dropped off, other than being very tired.
Well, other than the fact that I think he was embarrassed for losing his temper. Let's go to the phones. Let's see. We've got Dave from Ukaipa and TCI. Dave?
Well, this may work out better since Mr. Class left. I was going to thank Mr. Class for being willing to stay up until 1 or 2 in the morning in his area. First, a Happy New Year to everybody in the studio. And Mr. Class, if he's still listening.
No, Phil is gone.
He doesn't have cable.
And for you people out there that may have heard some dead air, because I guess Darren cut it off at the... with a 7-second delay. Mr. Class said a few bad words on the air, and that
pejoratives. a few nasties. He said a few nasty things. I still can't figure it out. A little unpredictable, Mr. Class.
Well, maybe between the three of us, we can cover the notes that I left for Mr. Class. Maybe we can just fill in basically, because he was on for like an hour and 25 minutes. So let me just, and besides that, everybody knows the word on UFOs tonight is bird poop, right?
Yeah.
You said it, Dave, not me.
Anyway, this is what I want to cover, okay? And if I can have as much time as possible, and then just let me go.
4 minutes.
Yeah.
2 minutes.
Because we're going to be at the half-hour break.
We can't give you more time than we gave
you. Oh, Dwight, shut up. You gave class more time than
Bleak
you gave
that expletive and go on. Come on.
Okay, First of all, it is true that there was a reward out for any information on a crashed UFO back in the 40s. Blaisdell came up with a lot of money after he gave his testimony. He did get a brand new truck, he got an electric generator, and he got a new refrigerator. Statement one is, if there were no UFOs and it was the famous mogul balloon that Mr. Class was talking about, the government sure wouldn't pay a reward of many tens of thousands of dollars back at that time.
Was it a government reward?
Yes, this was
from a newspaper.
A newspaper, right, yeah.
This is just basic standard knowledge. No, there was also a government reward, Don. There was. Secondly, we talked about this last week. Mr. Class doesn't say where the alien story suddenly originated from. Thirdly, I think that Mr. Class does have the right to speak his opinion, but I don't see, as far as the in-studio people, you and Renee and Vicky and Mr. Schultz, over the 30, 40 years that Mr. Class has been a UFO skeptic, for what reason would you have him on the air to change his mind? We know he's not going to change his mind.
Well, because I believe in presenting all sides of the argument, Dave. Now, I think everybody that's been listening to this show for any length of time knows that even though I'm skeptical, I very much acknowledge the reality of the phenomenon. But I am not one of these people that just go, you know, in one direction. I believe in, just like UFO Magazine, in presenting all sides to the question.
But it's also important, Dave, to allow debunkers. Now, you know, this is an interesting. Debunker is a pejorative now, but it's really not a pejorative. Debunking means to expose falsity. That's what it really means. But debunkers now today are not. They are part of the false.
But you know, Mr. Schultz, Dwight. Yeah. These debunkers all line up with four names: Block, Sagan, Class, Olberg. the late Dr. Menzel in the New York Times.
No, you're absolutely right. I agree with you. But tonight, I think we demonstrated, particularly early in the show, that the logic that is used to deal with this, and they do claim it is logic.
Are you by chance talking about that Jesse Marcel wanted the $1 million reward?
Well, it isn't just that Jesse Marcel wanted, but it's the whole concept of platitudes and slogans that are supposed to make you think you're too stupid to talk, but in fact, yeah, they could be hoisted.
Wait, back up. You hit the nail right on the head about being too stupid to talk. That's exactly what I was saying when I mentioned Flock, Sagan, Klass, Olberg, Menzel, and the New York Times.
Yeah,
those are very, wait a minute, those are very, very powerful names.
Yes, they are.
Those people that are peons like you, I, and Don, and the many people that are just civilians that got interested in the phenomena, were the people that really broke the UFO story. Why are the Flocks, the Sagans, the Klasses, the Olbergs, and the New York Times always the ones that people quote? Why are the people quoting Dwight Schultz and Don Ecker?
I don't want them quoting me. And after what Phil Klass said on the air, which unfortunately was bleeped, I don't want him quoting him. Dave, it's worth a half hour. We got to move along. We've got a lot of phone calls.
I need to cover one thing, though, just real quick.
Dave, we're at the half hour. Spit it out real quick.
Okay, in the current issue of UFO Magazine, Paul Davids has an ad for a special that he did about the Roswell movie, and in those videotapes are the recordings that Phil Klass said don't exist. The
okay, Dave.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Dave. Okay, we got another line open, so you've been trying to call in. Now's your time. We'll be back after this. His take on the UFO thing, I've got to say it, he's intellectually dishonest with this information. I did a debate with Klass in Denver back in 1989, and he was denigrating the entire UFO subject, and I pointed out a case to him, which was the Frederick Valentech case, where an aircraft and a young pilot disappeared flying between
Australia and
New Zealand after radioing in an emergency and the fact that he was having a UFO encounter. Klass's way of explaining that situation was to suggest that Valentech was perhaps a drug smuggler for the reason that he disappeared. And tonight, I've...
Do you remember what his proof was?
Well, he had no proof except that Valentech had four life preservers.
Extra life preservers.
On the aircraft. But you know, tonight, seeing the same thing, and I'm beginning to suspect more and more debunkers, not true intellectually honest skeptics, but debunkers will go to any extreme. Because they are so, the only thing I can surmise, they're so threatened by this subject. Well, you know, up until this point, I've always treated Phil with respect, and I've always respected him, even though I've disagreed with him. But after tonight, I've got to say, that has certainly hit me the wrong way. I'm very upset about that.
Well, it was quite, if there's anybody out there listening, if you think back to the evening, what these people say, and that's why I think Don is absolutely right, that there is an intellectual dishonesty. You say, these people would not have known what they were seeing. They had never seen this before. What was it? Scotch tape, rubber, seamstress tape with writing on it, balsa wood. You see, these are polemicists, people who score points in forensic debate, but there is not a search for the truth. And when they are confronted with what we poor peons out here call common sense, there is turmoil inside the little brain there. There's turmoil because they're not used to dealing with common sense. Debunkers who are intellectually dishonest are used to taking statistics and very, very convoluted scenarios and twisting it and turning it away from the central issue until you get lost.
Well, the only thing I can do is apologize for his appalling bad manners. You know, I was thinking here just a second ago, if the situation were reversed and I would have been a guest on his program, the last thing in the world I would have done was this horrible display that I witnessed tonight. And I'm still very upset. Let's go to the phones. We've got John in Yucaipa, who's joining us on Southland Cable. John?
Hello.
Hello.
John.
Yes, John. Look, you're on. Did you have something to say?
Yeah, it looks like Mr. Klass finally showed his true colors there at the end, isn't it?
No class in class.
Yeah,
right?
By showing no class. He's been doing a very poor job at trying to explain away UFO incidences. I think the U.S. government should fire him.
Yes, well, he still attends those CIA briefings, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's a wonder.
He's tired. Yeah, he's working with his condo, attending the CIA briefings, and and of course, you know, he was denigrating old DeBose because he was 92, and as I say, I guess he's just getting up there, and
You know, thinking back when Travis Walton and Mike Rogers were on Larry King when Firing the Sky was released a couple of years ago, Class went on Larry King with them, and then turned around and swore at Mike Rogers, calling him a so-and-so liar.
Right? Yeah, I heard that. Well, I remember that.
He denigrated, let's see, tonight he started off by making fun of you and your pronunciation. He denigrated...
Well, he didn't like
Marcel.
The way I said veteran,
right.
But I wore the uniform
that's
and he
right.
didn't.
That's right. And he denigrated Marcel. He basically spends his time, when he gets caught down one of those blind alleys, by low blows. And that's precisely what it's about here. You know, you just show your colors eventually when there is somebody confronting you with a... Even though this subject is arcane. This subject is mysterious. It's bizarre. It's out there. But there is logic. There is a problem here. The government has thousands of documents on this subject. And that's not because it's not important. It's because it is important. And when you are actually confronted, and I think he was for the first time tonight, that as it appeared in the New York Times that this is a story and a myth created by kooks and cultists. No, this is a story that was created by the RAAF, the government
of
the
United States.
What?
What's really ridiculous is when they try to explain away all these UFO encounters by the public as mass hysteria, or it was Venus, or it was a fireball, or a huge firefly.
Well, the problem is some of them are, but all of them are not. And the problem is they will find any explanation and use it over and over again to prove that everyone is
wondering. Stan Friedman said it very well on October the 1st on the Larry King special out of Area 51. He said it's not a question of are UFOs extraterrestrial, but are any extraterrestrial. John, we've got to run along.
All right.
Thank you for your call.
Good night.
And keep those eyes pointing to the sky. We're going to go to Florida. We're going to go to Carl, who's joining us from Sorrento, Florida, on satellite. Carl, good evening.
Hi, Don.
How's it going?
As people listening on the phone heard what he said. But we'll never tell.
No, please tell. We want this word to spread.
I've already told all my buddies on the radio.
Oh, you did?
We had about five or six listening on the satellite, you know.
Carl, would you say I was polite and somewhat...
Yeah, well... I was going to trap him. I was going to tell him how wonderful he was, and it was a good thing he was getting out the truth. And then I was going to lay this one on him. Maybe you've heard about this. About 5 weeks ago, somebody called from Northern Michigan into for the people, Chuck Carter.
Yeah.
And he said that they had still photographs, 35-millimeter blow-up, almost as good as Billy Myers. And then I heard from another source that they've got at least 30 minutes of video. And then 2 weeks ago, Paul Harvey commented on it. I didn't hear Paul Harvey. So I was going to ask him.
There was a woman in Michigan who had videoed this, yes.
Yeah, well, this was a man. I could look it up.
Well, there's a woman also.
Okay, but the man called. And he said they were going nationwide with these pictures and everything. So I was going to ask him, you know, Mr. Class sometimes writes the debunk before the story gets out. So I was going to ask him what fraud this was. I'm sure he's heard about it. Have you heard anything?
No, I haven't. I haven't, Carl. I haven't in the least.
Well, it's in the grapevine, so...
Well, we'll
get to see him.
We'll keep our ears peeled, my friend. Look, we've got all the lines lit up. I've got to move along, but thank you, Carl, and keep listening. Okay, we're going to go to, we've got our old friend Ralph, I think, back. Ralph from Escondido. Ralph, how are you doing?
Well, hi, how are you doing?
Just good.
Fine.
You were on the phone when Class blew up, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Okay. What was your take on Phil's intellectual honesty?
Well, you're putting me on the, you know, I've read.
Damn right, I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah, I've read his articles for years. They're very thoughtful and accurate in
scientific terms. Yes.
In Aviation Week,
I would not expect him to blow up like that. I mean, that's totally out of character, at least as I understand him.
Well, I don't think it's out of character, because I must tell you that this has been his behavior throughout all of the debates that I have seen. Ad hominem attacks, to make fun of somebody in the middle of an argument, and to say pretty awful things about people. The comment about Marcel, what he said about Valentech in the debate with Don, which was not on the show tonight, but it's typical behavior. And I don't understand how he has gotten to this point without it being pointed out to him. Because it is dishonest, and it is an example of, when your intellectual capacities start breaking down, and it isn't because of his age. It's because it's not the truth that you're dealing with. You can't follow the truth, so what you do is you call somebody a name.
Well, you know, I was going to ask him about the 1974 helicopter incident in Ohio, because he did a detailed analysis of that, and I think that he said that the crew confused up collective with down collective, which makes the helicopter go up and down. And I wanted to ask him about that. Unfortunately, he's not there.
Well, you heard what Phil said, and if I would have had to have cut him off, even if Darren wouldn't have stopped the air, but he hung up. I mean, I was willing to keep going, but class wasn't. So, like a pundit said one time, class dismissed.
I would like to, I found something interesting out a few weeks ago. I saw Dr. Stanton Friedman on Larry King's
show. Yes, you lived below him, didn't you?
You lived
below his books.
Now,
you were following Stanton.
Be precise now. Stanton is not a doctor. He is not a PhD.
That's right. Go ahead.
I knew him as Dr. Stan Friedman, a new PhD from Chicago, University of Chicago.
Hmm.
And he went to work for the Aircraft Nuclear Propulsion Division.
GE, right.
And I was a young boy. I borrowed physics books from him, and I also borrowed Donald Kehoe's book from him, and that's how my interest got started. Hmm. And when I saw him, I thought, my God, I know him. That's the Dr. Stan Friedman who loaned me Kehoe's and Edwards books that got me started, at least interested in UFOs.
Well, did you see him on Larry King back in October at the Area 51 special?
Yes, and that's where I first recognized him as the Dr. Stan Friedman that I knew.
Do you remember what Larry said to him? He called him Dr. Friedman, and Stanton looked at him and said, Larry, please, no one earned degrees.
Well, I'm totally confused because I thought he was a PhD from the University of Chicago.
No, he's got an MA, but he's not a PhD.
Frequently, people can act like a PhD to the point where you think they are.
Mm-hmm. And you know what that means, don't you? Piled higher and deeper.
Oh, stop. Okay. Stan Friedman is pretty
good. Oh, he's a good
guy. He is pretty good.
All right, Ralph, we've got to move along. We've got to take a real quick break here, and the phone lines are still lit up, and we've got to get back to those phones. But I want to thank you for your call.
Okay.
And,
perfect.
You know, it's possible that tonight Phil was an A9 variant. We'll be back after this.
That was for you, Ralph.
Are back.
No, Phil's not back.
Well, he's not back, but you and I are back. Let's see.
Phil. I'll see if the satellite will catch up.
Gunny chung. Let's go to Charles in West Covina, who's joining us on TCI. Charles, good evening.
Hi, good evening. My question is kind of mediocre. I'm kind of a novice.
Well, then I'll cut you off. Mediocre?
Phil's response here.
I don't really know. I was listening to your show, and I think what was wrong with that guy? Who was he? I mean, was he really important? Or
yes, he is. He's a very bright guy. No, he's a very, very bright, intelligent man who has represented the government's position for 30 years. Yes, he says just as a hobby. But as I was saying Don earlier, it's just incredible. A man spends 30 years chasing a horde of jackasses trying to prove that he's superior.
Whoa!
Well, that's certainly one way to look at it. But why don't you tell us what you're really thinking, Dwight?
Anyway, go ahead.
My question is kind of like a really mediocre question, but it's about crop circles.
Okay.
Are most of them hoaxes, or do you think that they're actually created by...
Well, some of them are hoaxes, and then some of them appear not to be. And Charles, That's about as much as I can tell you.
Oh, I mean, how can you really tell the hoaxes from the really genuine thing?
Well, the hoax circle.
They tell the hoaxers tell us that these are hoaxed.
Oh,
that's been one way.
That's it. These are hoaxed.
And there's, I also have a question about plasma. What really is plasma in the theory about plasma?
You talking about blood plasma or air plasma?
The air plasma, like glowing balls of
gas,
of
hot, heated,
very superheated gas.
Superheated gas.
Oh.
So. I don't have any right now, so.
We gotta go. Okay, we're gonna go to Mike in Paso Robles. Robles? Is that it?
Paso Robles.
Mike, are you there?
Yeah, Mike's here.
Oh, okay. Is that Paso Robles?
Paso Robles.
Okay.
Yeah, it's in the Central Coast. Probably San Luis Obispo will probably target you. Most people know where that's
at. I'm from the East Coast.
You just had an earthquake a few weeks ago, right?
Not in our particular area. No, that'd be further south by about 3 hours.
Okay. What was on your mind, Mike?
Oh, well, I'm a novice also, like the last caller.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd just like to tell you something I saw. It just added to your data bank of information.
Okay. Is it going to be very long?
No, this is brief and short. I can make it really fast here.
Okay.
Because it's been a weird night for you guys.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah. Now, I was somewhere in the Mojave Desert. This was a vacation with the family. And we looked out the window, and we saw in the sky for about 8 minutes or so a grouping of small lights, nothing distinguishing about them, like little colors or anything like that. But they were swirling around one another, almost as sometimes you see birds do that in spring, mm-hmm. large flocks of birds
mm-hmm.
that tumble. And it was just quite striking. They were left behind us as we were traveling in the car. In other words, they didn't stay parallel as we looked out, but they were swirling and moving and tumbling, and they were doing geometric figures in the air. And quite a long sighting. There was no noise. They didn't suddenly just like disappear. There wasn't any tracers or anything like that. Almost as if tiny little flashlight beams were on your ceiling, like in your bedroom, very controlled, almost like laser beam light points, or swarms of bees would suggest.
Hmm.
Yeah, just thought I would add that to you. I've never really talked to anybody.
When was this, Mike?
This would probably be about 1964, 1965.
Almost 30 years ago.
Oh, quite a long time ago, yeah.
Did you see this with anybody else?
Yeah, my mother and my father were in the front seats. And I was in the back, and we were just...
How old were you then, Mike?
Oh, gosh, I'd been about 12.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Your folks still living?
Yeah, my father's still alive. My mom has passed away. But it was one of those interesting conversations where you rationally try to explain something, and everything that you come up with just not going to explain it away. You know, like I can remember my father at the time trying to explain to me that it was afterburners, that these were jets with afterburners. Yeah. But we were kind of high-minded.
Which probably would have made some kind of weird sense then, wouldn't it?
Well, it was just kind of like the rational mind trying to explain away something that
exactly.
it had never seen before. So
exactly.
it's a natural process.
How long have you been listening to the show, Mike?
This is the second time. Maybe about a month ago, I just happened to catch it. And it's something that's very interesting to me.
Well, by golly, we'll expect you here each week from now on.
Okay. One more thing real quick. Also, as I had for a long time, I used to ask people if they'd ever seen anything because it was a good icebreaker conversationally.
Mm-hmm.
And a good German friend of mine, a student, got spanked by his father for telling that he had seen a small, seamless silver sphere hovering above a fence about the size of a basketball, motionless, no sound. And he said he saw it for about 10, 15 seconds, and it just went straight up.
Well, that's very interesting because that's just been videoed in London and in England, and was on sightings with a helicopter
mm-hmm.
hovering above it.
Huh. Well,
so it's a common report.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, it was almost as if, Sputnik.
Yes.
Some round sphere. And it was kind of one of those things where you talk with the individual, he was very genuine with me. and he wasn't the kind of person that talked about these sort of things.
Okay, Mike. We've
thank you very much.
Thank you for your call, and please keep listening.
And your host, you're the host, you're Don, right?
Yes.
And then
Dwight,
your co-host is Dwight.
Schultz, you're right.
Okay, both of you, I think you're doing a really fine job. You sound like real bright minds in a cloudy world.
Well, we appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
You.
Have fun. Bye-bye.
Okay, we've got one line, two lines open if you've been trying to call in. Do it. We're going to go to New York now. We've got John calling us and joining us on satellite. John, good evening.
Hi, guys. Hey, Dwight, I got to see a picture in a book the other day.
Which book was that?
One of those Star Trek books. My daughter got one. The first thing I did was look you up. Hey, listen, what I wanted to comment on was one thing where he made a comment that Marcel was a ham.
Yes.
Now, he would have known what a corner reflector was.
Of course he would have.
And especially since this was nothing new, I mean, reflecting off tinfoil during the war, they were doing that in England.
Sure they were. Well, the British, that's how the British were able to win the Battle of Britain with
Marcel
radar.
Right, so this was nothing so exotic that somebody wouldn't know what it was.
Let's get on the record. Marcel said he was familiar with all of those things. He said it. He said he was familiar with the balloons. He was familiar with all of that stuff, and of course he was.
And then the other thing is, where did they say the balloon? Where does he say the balloon came from? I heard someone else say that the wind. They had checked on the wind at that time, and it was not blowing that way at all.
Well, that's Randall. Yeah. Randall has said that they checked the meteorological data, and that the other launches, the previous launches, went in the opposite direction, and the winds aloft were the same and hadn't changed, and that the Carl Flock proposed Mogul balloon would have followed the pathway.
Well,
the
I was going to mention that to Phil this evening before he blew up and hung up.
Mm-hmm.
So you know that it's kind of like. It was something a four-year-old would do, wouldn't you say?
I would say
it was amazing.
It was amazing, and I mean, if you notice tonight, see, it was not a good night for Phil. Phil had a really hard time with his own logic. It kept being thrown back in his face, and he couldn't face it.
He was trying to hang up from the start.
Yes, he was. He got very upset early on.
Yeah, right. One other suggestion I have: you may want to think about, or did you ever think about interviewing or having on the show some of the astronomers from local areas?
Yes.
Like I'm in the Binghamton area of New York.
Well, we have some astronomers out here too, John.
Yeah, and I know I had spoken to this one fella, and he was the whatever they call him, the head of the observatory. And I said, "Did you ever see anything?" He says, "No." He says, "But I believe it." He says, "Because I have spoken to too many doctors, policemen, reputable people,
right,
that have seen things." And he says, "There's got to be real." But he says, "I've never seen anything, but there must be quite a few of them that have, if they scan the skies all night long,
Amen.
Maybe there's something out there." Okay?
Okay, John. Hey, thank you for calling in.
Bye-bye.
And, have a good evening. All right, we were going to go to Debbie, who had called in from Little Rock, but it looks like Debbie hung up. So now I'm going to go to Vince, who's calling from La Puente on United. Vince, good evening.
Hello.
Good evening.
Yeah. I tell you this, I really love the show.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I've been a big fan for so long.
Well, that's great, Vince. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I have a couple of hot dogs on the grill, and I was wondering if they were, like, pretty delicious.
Yep, that's great. Let's go to Kevin, who's calling from Simi Valley. Kevin, good evening.
Yeah, hi, how you doing?
I'm fine.
I've seen your show a couple times, and a caller a while ago was talking about spheres that were seen on sightings.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw them on another program down in Florida that they were just like hovering in the air and all of a sudden like instantly just jetted off out of sight, and it was a really good video of it. And I was just wondering, what's your explanation?
Well, the problem is, the one that was on sightings was consistent. There was some reference point because there was a helicopter.
Yeah.
And the sphere was hovering above a crop circle, and then the helicopter literally started buzzing the people taking the video.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, and there is no... I mean, what is the explanation for it? You just say, that is what a lot of people have described, and I've never seen it, but there it is on video, and If it's real, it's important. But you know, that's what you're left with.
Yeah, I may have saw in hard copy or something, some bogus show like that. But in Gulfport, Florida,
Gulf Breeze.
That's right. It. And they were just like, there's like a guy having a video, and you can see like a ball there or a spear. And all of a sudden, it would sit there for a little bit, and it would just jet off, and you can actually see it jet off, like, to the left of the screen. Have you seen that, or...?
I haven't seen the one you're talking about, or I'm not. I mean, I've seen... Sometimes you see these lights in the sky, and you see little blips on... And I can't make anything out other than I'm looking at a blip, you know? But, I mean, I'm not familiar with the particular one you're talking about.
A lot of time. Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
The condition of Don Echo.
Thank you, Kim. Okay, well, that's it, I guess.
Classic show tonight.
Another week. Tomorrow, I'm going to be leaving with Vicky to go down to Disney World to moderate this event. Hopefully, they're going to be much, much more professional than my guest this evening. And incidentally, ladies and gentlemen, let me one more time apologize for that. I know probably most of you did not hear what transpired because it was bleeped, but I've got to tell you, I'm still shocked. This coming week, we are going to be doing a show with Paul Davids, executive producer of Roswell the Movie, and very, very likely Jeremy Kagan, who directed it.
And Phil, if you're still alive, we invite you to call in.
That's it. Here's the music. We'll see you in a week, and hey, keep those eyes pointed to the skies. Mm-hmm.